are listening to the Truth Frequency Radio Network.
No hate, no hype, no fear.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Gosh, thank you so much for hanging out with us in this morning on a Monday. It's really nice to see all of you guys in the chat room this morning. My name's JD. This is, of course, the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. Today is Monday. It is the 30th day of March. Cannot believe how quickly March is flying by. We are live right now. I owe you guys an apology. I really do. I apologize from the bottom of my heart for not being with you guys on Friday morning. Normally, I would tell you guys how much I missed you over the weekend, because right after the show ends at noon on Friday, I'm pretty much off the hook for the whole weekend. But hopefully, all of you guys caught the Woo Crew on Friday night. I didn't know, and it came as news to me, but I apparently have been inaugurated into the Woo Crew, so that's going to be like a normal Friday night thing for me. And yes, going back to what happened on Thursday, had some tummy troubles, ladies and gentlemen, was under the weather, and I just couldn't get it together to get here to do the show in the morning. So I apologize for that. It won't happen again, but we had an awesome time hanging out Friday night. I gotta tell you, hanging out with Kevin and Popeye and Mel and Marty and Joe and Johnny King, I'm telling you, what a great way to spend a Friday night. That's better than a Friday night that I've had in a long time. So that's going to be a permanent thing. Really looking forward to making that stuff happen on Friday nights for you guys. But I do apologize for not being here Friday morning. It won't happen again, I promise. And to make it up for you, we've got an absolutely amazing guest for you guys today. The one and only Golden Jackass is going to be joining us on the program in the next hour. Jim Willey, an international economics guru for sure, statistics expert, absolutely amazing individual. Cannot tell you guys how much I'm looking forward to this specific conversation. It's going to be a lot to go over, though. I'm not going to lie. We're going to go through a lot of things. Obviously, a lot of geopolitical events going on right now, a lot of economic ramifications involving those. And Jim Willey's been nice enough to decide to join us today, try and kind of work us through all this stuff that's going on. Ben Fuchs is going to be joining us again tomorrow. Benjamin Fuchs, pharmacist Ben. You guys know how much I like to do the natural health shows, try and keep everybody abreast of how to stay healthy and things like that. I haven't gotten a chance to speak with Ben yet, so I'm not exactly sure exactly what we'll be talking about, but I can assure you that it will be absolutely informative and entertaining, because Ben is just absolutely stunning, stunning radio personality, to say the least. And then on Wednesday, we've got a really big show as well. This is a big one. This is going to be kind of a heavy show, guys, Wednesday. We're going to talk about a book called Confessions of a DC Madam. It's written by a guy named Henry Vinson and his co-author, Nick Bryant. I think, if I'm not mistaken, this will be Henry Vinson's very first interview ever. And definitely some sensitive subjects that we're going to be talking about on Wednesday, but really important to talk about. Exactly how the manipulation of these political entities and banking entities, the people that are involved, actually works, especially given all of the pedophilia stuff that's coming out of the UK and also some of the ancillary stories that are coming out of the United States right now. This book, Confessions of a DC Madam, outlines the story of, well, it's a true story, Henry Vinson. Henry Vinson actually, by his mid-20s, was running the largest gay escort service in Washington, D.C., and so, essentially he was involved, with very, very high up, you know, political people, people in very high up places of power. and has been in the rooms that are, you know, wired with cameras and wired with microphones and things like that. So that's basically how the name of the game, or what the name of the game is in Washington, is sexual blackmail and things like that. So going to be some heavy stuff on Wednesday, but since it's topical and it does absolutely relate to some of this pedophilia stuff that's coming out right now, I think it's going to be an important thing to talk about. We've got another author joining us on Thursday. His name is Servando Gonzalez. He is a Cuban-born American writer. He's written a book called I Dare to Call It Treason, The Council on Foreign Relations and the Betrayal of America. Absolutely stunning book, this one as well. So definitely interesting, a lot of perspective. We're going to get a lot of geopolitical perspective this week, and I'm definitely looking forward to that. And then Xavier Hayes is going to be joining us on Friday, hopefully with a better connection from Las Vegas this time. We tried to have him on a couple of Fridays ago. We couldn't do it because the connection was just so bad, but he's written that book, one of the best and most most sold books in the world on the topic of ufology. But this one is about aliens in ancient Egypt, and I'll tell you, I have gone through it twice now. This is a great, great book. Really looking forward to talking to Xavier and hoping that the connection will be good for that day. Okay, what else do I want to talk about? Was there anything else I needed to cover this morning? Everybody doing well? I got to point out also the weather here was absolutely garbage over the weekend. I don't know where you guys are. I don't know how your weekends were, but it snowed here on Saturday. I mean, and now it's 70 and sunny outside, and everybody has to work. So there you go. Just putting that out in the world. Fantastic. Go team. Happy to be here. Okay. Let's talk about some international news. Obviously, if you guys are new to the program, you can go check out redpillreports.com and go to the show section at the top of the page. You'll be able to find out everything you want to know about Jim Willie, the one and only Golden Jackass, joining us in about an hour to talk about all kinds of economic stuff. And underneath all of his information, you'll be able to find all the news that we've aggregated from around the world, just trying to keep people kind of up to date on what is going on. So we'll go over that stuff for the first hour. And then, as I said, Jim will be joining us in about an hour. Okay, so still in the news right now, obviously on the international front, is this plane crash that went down in France, and it just seems to be getting more and more and more suspicious. I'm not going to lie. I'll put myself on a skinny branch out there and just say, you know, this whole plane crash looks a little fishy to me. And so some new information coming out now talking about vision trouble. Apparently the co-pilot was being treated for some sort of vision issues, right? Which seems really suspicious to me. He was also, it's also come out now that the police did find antidepressants during a search of his apartment. Really unusual to me that they are, they're actually putting that out into the news cycle, just because, you know, so many of us believe that a lot of these goofy events that seem to be happening are a result of people being on cocktails of SSRI drugs or, you know, statin reuptake stuff. It was not good, not good, the cocktails that we put these people on. And so that to me seems really unusual that they would put that out in the news cycle. Now, Friday, I was going to tell you guys that there were some reports coming out saying that the pilot himself had tried to break his way back into the cockpit using an axe. And that one threw me for a loop also. I went ahead and reached out to Rebecca Roth over the weekend. Obviously, we've spoken to her a couple of times. She was on Kev Baker's show last week, and she's also going to be, I believe, on the Woo Crew this week. So we'll be talking about a lot of a lot more stuff in terms of plane crashes with her. But I did reach out to her this weekend, and she did, in fact, confirm that the axe on the airplane is actually kept in the cockpit. So unless the pilot decided to take the axe to the bathroom with him for whatever reason, the idea that he would have had an axe out in the cabin and trying to be, you know, breaking his way back into the cockpit seems a little unlikely to me right now. So again, just more details coming out, and it just seems to be more and more ridiculous as the days go on. So I wonder if we'll actually ever figure out what really happened. I would be very surprised if we did. Want to talk a little bit about another plane crash happened over the weekend. The Air Canada flight crashed on a runway in Halifax. Now, this one I also talked to Rebecca Roth about, and it didn't seem to be quite so suspicious, but it was another Airbus. And of course, you know, if airplanes are just falling out of the sky these days, we should probably all be paying attention to that. This is not specifically what happened in this incident. This Air Canada flight 624 crashed on a runway in Halifax Stanfield International Airport in Canada, and the airline has confirmed this. The plane reportedly hit power lines and sustained extensive damage upon the crash landing. No passengers were killed in the emergency landing. or I guess it wasn't an emergency landing. Essentially, Rebecca told me that there was an immense amount of wind going on up there, 60-mile-an-hour gusts near the ground, which obviously would tax your ability to fly a plane in. And, you know, obviously, with all the research that we've been doing about the Airbuses, you know, the only time that the pilots are really in charge of those aircraft is when they are coming in for a landing or taking off. So this one apparently clipped some power lines on the way in. The terminals all went black. They lost power at the airport for about an hour and a half. But what's interesting about this is all of, again, you got to go and look at these pictures of a plane. You know, we had the Delta last week or the week before that clipped a chain link fence and it ripped the wing off the plane, right? And then you've got this one here that looks like it's been through a garbage disposal, and all it did was take a pretty heavy landing. And, I mean, it obviously is never going to fly again, just based on clipping some power lines. I'm not saying, you know, that, those are minor incidents. Obviously, they're minor incidents, but it's just important to remember the crash scenes from the 9/11 story, the lack of plane at the Pentagon, the lack of plane in Pennsylvania there, and also, you know, looking at this plane and what it looks like after it hit the ground. I don't think you could slam this plane through a steel reinforced building. I'm just saying. Just saying. Hey, Truth has got to leave early. And he is doing his due diligence right now. He is letting everybody know the BDI is up to $5.99 this morning. And I'll try to remember that when we get over into the economics. Truth, thank you very much for being here this morning. Appreciate the update on that. So, yeah, plane crash in Canada, clips and power lines. All the passengers were eventually evacuated at the terminal and everybody's fine, but the plane is pretty much trashed. And I just it's just another Airbus incident, so important to point that out. And also it's just interesting to see what an actual plane crash looks like. It's just fun to go back and look at what they are trying to tell us happened at 9/11. And anyway, that's what's going on there. We got a story from the UK right now, which I found a little shocking. Obviously, this correlates with all the pedophilia stuff that's going on right now in the UK, but a former headmaster who was found guilty of molesting boys as young as 10 at a special needs school in the 1970s has just been found dead over the weekend, just days before he was due to be sentenced. The body of David Toohey, who was 83, was found floating in the River Thames close to his home in Oxford earlier this week. He was due to be sentenced at Norfolk Crown Court on Monday, today, after earlier being found guilty of 15 counts of sexual assault following a 9-day trial. He was in charge of the Eccles Hall School in Quiddenham, Norfolk, in the 1970s when he carried out the incident and serious sexual assaults against 5 pupils who had all had special needs and were all under the ages of 13. Unbelievable. So anyway, Norfolk police confirmed that Toohey had been found dead in the Thames River and said, this is the key operative word for this key phrase here, guys. He has been found dead in the River Thames and said his death was being treated as explained, but not suspicious. Can you say that guy jumped off a bridge because he didn't want to have to go do time for the absolute ridiculous things that he did? And I'll tell you, the article goes into some detail. I will spare you guys because it is Monday morning. One of the things I thought was kind of funny, and not that it's funny, but it's unusual, I guess, to me, is that he was originally arrested last June and charged with 4 counts of an indecent assault and 4 counts of buggery against 1 victim. Okay, all you UK guys hanging out in the chat room right now, appreciate you guys all being in there. What is buggery? I mean, seriously, I've never heard anything like that. I mean, this seems like that's the dumbest word that you could use in relation to this. Anyway, guy was going to be sentenced here today and decided he'd rather just kill himself, which, you know, I think that's a cop out, a little selfish on my side of the fence here. Okay, let's talk about Yemen. Lots of unrest. We're kind of just jumping all over the world today. I don't really know. I didn't really have a good way to put all this stuff in order because there really just isn't an order. This is buggery means, oh, goodness, tabby. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Buggery does have a meaning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going to say it on the air, but go ahead and look it up online. And it is more serious. I don't know. Why do they sugarcoat it with a word like buggery? That seems like that's just a stupid cop-out word, but okay, more serious than I thought. Thank you, UK kids, for clearing that up for all of us out there. Buggery, worse than first expected, ladies and gentlemen. Yikes. Okay, The Yemeni warplane fleet has apparently been destroyed. The 3 days of airstrikes going on all over the weekend led by a coalition, led by Saudi Arabia, destroyed Yemen's fleet of fighter aircraft. First question, where did they get the fighter aircraft there in Yemen? Because it seems a whole lot like maybe the coalition led by Saudi Arabia is destroying the $500 million worth of equipment that we apparently left in Yemen last month. But anyway, apparently this fleet of aircraft have now been destroyed. This crippled military commander centers and also dealt a blow to the Houthi insurgents, according to a senior defense official in Riyadh. In a statement published Saturday evening by the Saudi press agency, Brigadier General Ahmed bin Hazin Aziri said rebels are no longer possessing jet fighters. And the coalition air raids also destroyed most of the group's arsenal of ground-to-ground ballistic missiles and command and control centers. Analysts said the attacks are part of a strategy to eliminate the air defense's weapons arsenal and communication lines of the Shiite insurgents in a bid to ease the way for a potential land invasion. Many residents in the destitute Arabian Peninsula nation fear a ground assault, and the Aziri hinted that the Saudi-led campaign would continue, telling the news agency that the first phase of the attacks have now been achieved. So again, is a ground war imminent in Yemen? Yes, I think it probably is. Let's talk about the next big story in there. The Arab leaders have agreed to form a joint military force at the Sharm el-Sheikh summit, hosting Egyptian President Abdel Sisi has announced. So again, Egyptian President Abdel Sisi announced that the Arab leaders are now going to form a joint military force, okay? And the meeting was dominated, of course, by discussion about the situation in Yemen, where Saudi Arabia leads a bombing campaign right now against rebels. The Arab leaders have decided to agree on the principle of a joint Arab military force, Sisi said. He said this Sunday as the summit was wrapping up, and the summit's final communique called for coordination efforts and steps to establish a unified Arab force to intervene in countries such as Yemen. And the Egyptian leader said a high-level panel will work out the structure and mechanisms of the future force. The work is expected to take about 4 months. Earlier reports said the joint Arab military may be formed from roughly 40,000 elite troops and backed by warplanes, warships, and light armor. There are, however, doubts that all 22 members of the Arab League would significantly contribute to it. The formation of the force could again take months. And in a communique signed in the Egyptian resort city, the Arab countries also called on the West to form a more comprehensive response to militancy, which is thinly veiled, which is obviously a thinly veiled reference to the desire by some Arab nations to see new Western military intervention in Libya. So Arab leaders said this operation in Yemen is to continue until the Houthis withdraw and hand over their weapons. Yemen remains divided after Ali Abdullah Saleh resigned as the country's president in 2012 in response to mass protests against his 2 decades of rule. He kept a strong foothold in Yemen's politics, however, keeping allies in several key positions of the government and the military. Houthi rebels have been a major anti-government force in Yemen for decades, but have capitalized on the weakening of the central government, which failed to address pressing issues like tribal divisions, the economic slowdown, and pressure from the Yemeni branch of al-Qaeda and others. So again, remember, we left half a billion dollars worth of weapons there in Yemen. You gotta have to wonder now. You know what bothers me as well is I'm pretty sure it's a Shiite uprising going on in Yemen right now, which we are teaming up with Saudi Arabia to go and bomb. But isn't it a Shiite government in Iraq that we're subsidizing and helping also? I'm so confused when it comes to trying to figure out who our allies actually are and who they are not. I guess it's the ones who kowtow to whatever our wishes are that don't get bombed. I guess that's probably the simplest way to look at that. Speaking of getting bombed, U.S. dropped 60,000 propaganda leaflets on the ISIS stronghold of Raqqa. Yeah, tens of thousands of graphic leaflets southwest of the Syrian city of Raqqa recently aimed at discouraging the recruitment for the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. These grisly cartoon-style leaflets show recruits lining up to be shoved into a meat grinder, which is part of the Pentagon, part of what the Pentagon formally calls Military Information Support Operations, or propaganda, or MISO, meant to influence thinking on the battlefield, or propaganda. The Pentagon said a U.S. Air Force F-15 warplane dropped about 60,000 of the leaflets a little earlier in March And the message of the leaflet is that if you allow yourself to be recruited by Daesh, you will find yourself in a meat grinder. This is obviously pretty graphic there. The leaflet, full color picture. Yeah, big meat grinder. Good times. So yeah, we're getting ready to go probably turn up the heat in Syria, probably also in Libya. And I imagine since we're supporting Saudi Arabia that it could be said that we are at war in Yemen right now also. Just saying. Okay, let's see here. Talking about other places where there's conflict in the Middle East. Right now, the possible signing of a deal on Iran's controversial nuclear program is dangerous, as it may be the only thing Tehran lacks to establish control over the whole of the Middle East. This is according to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. According to the recently re-elected right-wing prime minister, the Iran-Luzon-Yemen axis, I love that they're throwing Switzerland into the axis of evil here, because the nuclear talks, let's remind everyone here, were taking place in Luzon, Switzerland. So now Benjamin Netanyahu indicating that there is an Iran-Luzon-Yemen axis, or an Iran-Switzerland-Yemen axis, which poses a threat to all of humanity and must be stopped now, okay? So this nuclear deal, combined with the control Tehran already has over governments in Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon, could allow Iran to conquer the Middle East, according to Netanyahu. So again, previously, Israel's deputy foreign minister, Sazi Hegabi, he told public radio that the Jewish state will not be bound by an accord concluded by others, Iran and the P5+1 powers, China, France, Russia, the UK, and the US, plus Germany, and we will know how to defend itself. We know how to defend ourselves. So again, Netanyahu and his little cohorts over there saying essentially they don't even care if there is some kind of nuclear deal, because they're not going to be bound by it anyway. So it really doesn't make any difference to them which way the wind is going to blow. But apparently Iran going to take over the entire world via Iraq, which is again a sovereign nation, just doesn't make any sense to me. You wonder if Netanyahu has any access to any kind of actual intelligence information whatsoever at all. Meanwhile, Russia also warned Saudi Arabia against their airstrikes against the Houthi rebels in Yemen, which are believed to be backed by Iran. And obviously this warning coming from Russia could also be having an effect on these talks. So there's a lot going on right now. Remember, Russia and Iran signed a military accord not too long ago. We had that discussion not too long ago. So you got to wonder how strong Israel really feels like it is if they're going to be stepping up against Iran with Russia sitting there kind of waiting in the wings. Here's more indication kind of regarding that too. Moscow apparently now coming out over the weekend saying they will support the Palestinians in their effort to build an independent state with a capital in East Jerusalem. This was according to Russia's President Vladimir Putin. He said this on Saturday, according to Israel Radio. He was speaking at the 26th annual Arab League Summit in the Red Sea Resort, same one we've been talking about all morning. And Putin said that the Palestinians have the right to establish an independent and habitable state with a capital in East Jerusalem. He also further vowed that Russia will continue to contribute to achieving this goal through bilateral and multilateral channels. Putin spoke of the importance of matching and synchronizing the efforts of the Arab League with those of the Middle East Quartet, composed of the United Nations, the United States, the European Union, and Russia. In a phone call with Benjamin Netanyahu, Putin spoke of developing the relationship of the two nations with a focus on Iran, whose foreign delegation is currently obviously engaged in pivotal negotiations with world powers over its nuclear program. But isn't that interesting, though, that Putin not afraid to throw his hat in the ring here? And yeah, again, I kind of have to wonder what Israel's actual response to this is going to be, because it's one thing to be trying to stare down Iran, who doesn't have nuclear weapons, but it's another thing to be messing around with their economic partners, certainly one as well-armed as Russia and as large as Russia. You could see where the dividing lines are becoming more and more clear. And also interesting to note how small the area is starting to get as you get all of these. You know, we haven't even talked about the fact that China is developing solar power in Pakistan. You've got Russia now developing nuclear power plants in Jordan. I mean, there's so many economic overlaps and fundamental agenda overlaps that are going on in the region right now. Strange bedfellows being created there. Need to talk a little bit about Ghana also. According to a report by Nigerian Watch, which is a UK-based magazine for Nigerian communities, hundreds of U.S. Marines are now being stationed in Ghana as the Nigerian election began to take place. The election apparently went down over the weekend. We're still waiting to see what the results are going to be in terms of that. But the Marines were allegedly being stationed in Ghana as so to be available to remove American personnel from Nigeria if the elections result in violence. Possibly that some analysts, a possibility that some analysts are expecting. Nigerian Watch reports that there are, that there may be post-election violence, especially after the results are announced, as neither the ruling People's Democratic Party or the opposition, All Progressives Congress, is likely to accept defeat. So again, regardless of who won the election, which was, begun on Saturday over the weekend, there are a lot of analysts over there who believe that neither party is really ready or willing to concede defeat yet. So there could be some violence, in the streets. So apparently we've got some Marines over there getting ready to, throw down. Okay, everybody in the call and calm down the chat room. Calm down. Yes, I had a slip of the tongue. It does happen. It's live radio and it's a Monday, but, anyway. Golly, good times. Okay. In a related story, militants from the extremist group Boko Haram attacked several Nigerian towns. So here is the violence that we were anticipating. Now they torched homes, fatally shooting people who tried to flee before reportedly beheading some of those people with chainsaws. So the string of terror attacks comes amid the presidential vote. At least 25 people were killed and more than 30 injured in the village of Biritai on the Borno state, according to local officials there. So surviving witnesses described gruesome scenes of murder, saying that not only did the extremists set homes on fire and shoot those trying to escape, but also decapitated bodies. So Boko Haram, good stuff. Perhaps that's why we've got all the Marines there right now. It may not have anything to do with the elections, but as the elections result come out, we will keep you guys up to date on all of that. Also, just as a an ancillary related story, getting back to the Israel issue, the UN kind of finished up their last session in Geneva on Friday, and they did it by adopting four new resolutions condemning Israel. That's four times more than any of the other 192 UN member states combined. So, again, that's more than North Korea, more than Syria, more than Iran. Four of them against Israel, mostly having to do with the war against Gaza. I fully support this. Anyway, we got to go to the 3-minute break, guys. We got lots more news to cover. When we come back, we'll go through all of the national news. We got some economic stuff and science and health. And, of course, the one and only Jim Willey will be joining us in about a half an hour. So keep it right here, guys. 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique, affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
Take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Down the rabbit hole with Popeye. Tuesday through Friday.
Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the radio show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. Yep, slip of the tongue in that last little segment, and everybody in the chat room having a good time with it. Love it, love it, love it. Appreciate you guys being in there. We got some new guys in the chat room, people I've never seen in there before. Ellen, happy to have you here. Buster Brown, never seen you in here before. Appreciate you guys all coming in, checking out the show. Check out redpillreports.com, and you can go right to the top there. You'll find out more about our guest that we're getting ready to have in about a half an hour. Jim Willie is going to be on. It's going to be a big time economic / geopolitical discussion that we're getting ready to have. So any of you new guys out there, that will be where you want to go. And if you guys have questions, I will try and steward them across. I'm telling you right now, Jim Willie's got an agenda, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to have to stay out of the way today because he's got about 900 things he wants to talk about, and we don't have, it's going to go quick this hour. So anyway, let's hop back into the news here, right meow. National news. Let's talk about Hillary Clinton and the fact that on Friday, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton not only refused to turn over her email server to an independent third party, but now there's claims that she has, in fact, wiped the server clean, dealing a setback to the Special Investigative Committee looking at the 2012 Benghazi terrorist attack. This has been Trey Gowdy's baby here since the inception of this committee. So anyway, committee chairman Trey Gowdy said the whole House will have to decide now what the next steps are in the push to try and pry information out of Ms. Clinton, but said that she will likely have to appear and testify on her decision-making about the emails, setting up a pretty dramatic showdown between the former First Lady and her congressional critics. Mr. Gowdy actually said on Friday that not only was the secretary the sole arbiter of public record, but she also summarily decided to delete all of the emails forever from the server, ensuring that no one could check behind her analysis in the public interest. So Ms. Clinton said at a press conference earlier this month that she culled through more than 60,000 emails from her time as secretary and decided that about 30,000 of them were public records that should have been maintained. And she said the rest were messages relating to her daughter's wedding or her yoga class schedule, and she didn't keep those. Horse crap. But Mr. Gowdy said Ms. Clinton's lawyer informed him on Friday that she unilaterally decided to wipe her server clean and permanently delete all emails from it. It was not clear when Ms. Clinton made this final decision, but it said he said that it appeared to have happened after the State Department asked her to turn over the government business messages in late October. So again, wiping the server clean, that's just more good stuff coming from Team A here. Also, there's a lot of investigations going on right now, just putting this out here, but Senate Republicans are again attempting now to ascertain why the former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's top assistant, Huma Abedin, was allowed to keep working at the State Department under a special part-time status while also being employed at a politically connected consulting firm, according to news reports which released on Saturday. Questions also linger about Mrs. Abedin's alleged connection to the Muslim Brotherhood's women's auxiliary while having access to classified information and documents. Iowa GOP Senator Chuck Grassley, who chairs the Senate Judiciary Committee, is following up on allegations that both women use private internet server and email accounts for State Department correspondence, even those that were considered confidential and classified. Grassley claims that the earlier requests to the department have been largely ignored since the Senate was controlled by the Democrats. But now with the GOP in the majority, new requests have gone to the department's inspector general and to the Secretary of State, John Kerry, seeking their involvement. What also made it difficult was the fact that during Clinton's time as Secretary of State, her department had no inspector general for a very long period of time. Grassley's first probe began in 2013 when he requested all communications between Abedin after she went from being a full-time assistant chief of staff for Clinton to a part-time assistant chief of staff. The reason for the changes was that Huma began her job with the government consulting company Teneo, okay? As a part-timer, Abedin made more than $155,000 a year, and a number of conflict of interest concerns arise when a government employee is simultaneously being paid by a private company, especially when that company is Teneo. This is, according to Grassley, said this back in a March 19th letter to John Kerry. Grassley said that he wishes to know what steps the department took to ensure that Abedin's outside employment with a political intelligence and corporate advisory firm did not conflict with her simultaneous employment at the State Department. In addition, suspicion still exists about Huma Abedin, who is the wife of disgraced ex-Congressman Anthony Weiner, and her connections to radical Islamists such as the Muslim Brotherhood. While Barack Obama and then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton repeatedly told the American people that the radical Islamist group was moderate, experts on Islamic terrorism, well, they knew better. The Muslim Brotherhood Secret Women's Division, the Muslim Sisterhood, a.k.a. the International Women's Organization, or IWO, the name of Huma's mother, Saleha Abedin, appears on its membership roster, according to Muslim terrorist experts Walid Shubat and Ben Barak in an Examiner news story. Neither Huma Abedin or any major Western media outlet even mention what is common knowledge in the Arab world, that Huma Abedin has ties to the Muslim Sisterhood. In addition, Shobat and Barak have confirmed that Huma Abedin has a brother named Hussein Abedin, who works at the Oxford University and was also a founding member of the Oxford Center for Islamic Studies. Hassan is listed as a fellow, and he partners with a number of Muslim Brotherhood members on the board, including Al-Qaeda associate Omar Nassif and the notorious Muslim Brotherhood leader Sheikh Yusuf Qaradawi. Both men have been listed as OCIS trusts. In fact, Nassif continues to this day to serve on the board as the board chairman. Woo. So anyway, why does Miss Hillary Clinton have a, what's the best way to say this? I'm trying to not say this in a bad way here, but why does she have somebody like that working for her, who's also part of the, Muslim Sisterhood Secret Women's, or the Muslim Brotherhood Secret Women's Division? I don't know. Nothing to see here, I suppose. We'll just keep moving on. But anyway, more, I think Hillary Clinton's days are numbered, ladies and gentlemen. I think people are really starting to get to the bottom of exactly is what is going on. I'll tell you, $155,000 a year for a part-time job. That's a good job if you can get it. And so let's put that in the good job if you can get it category, and let's put this one in there also. The new report from the Department of Justice came out over the weekend. This is great. The Department of Justice report recently exposed the fact that on many occasions, DEA agents operating in Colombia engaged in sex parties in their taxpayer-funded living quarters with prostitutes paid for by drug cartels. So yeah, good job if you can get it, I suppose. So yeah, the Drug Enforcement Agency is the Department of Justice's law enforcement arm charged with enforcing U.S. drug prohibition laws, ostensibly under the guide or the guise of protecting Americans from their own libertine lavacious tendencies. However, a new DOJ Inspector General report released on Thursday exposed the fact that the DEA agents stationed in places like Colombia let local police watch their weapons and other personal items as they engaged in hedonistic sex parties in their taxpayer-funded living quarters with prostitutes paid for by the drug cartels. 10 agents confessed to attending the parties, some of whom were disciplined with suspensions lasting between 2 and 10 days. Yeah. Oh, good point. PRC is saying in the chat room, getting back to our story about Clinton's presidential aide there, or Secretary of State aide, PRC pointing out that if we check where Clinton's cash for her presidential campaign comes from, I think we'll see why Clinton keeps her close. That's a very good point, PRC. It's always that campaign finance stuff that gets you in the end, isn't it? Okay, getting back to this report. Yeah, DEA agents having sex parties with prostitutes in Colombia being paid for by drug cartels. So it's got to be right up there in the high water mark for good jobs if you can get them. The Washington Post notes also that though the report did not specify the country in which the parties took place, a law enforcement official did say that they happened in Colombia. The parties reportedly occurred on an ongoing basis between 2005 and 2008, although some of the DEA agents participating in these parties did deny it. The information in the case file suggests they should have known the prostitutes in attendance were paid with cartel funds, according to the report. So the report was part of a wider probe into sexual misconduct and harassment allegations that have been leveled against the FBI, the ATF, the DEA, the U.S. Marshal Services, and Secret Services, including additional reports of inappropriate sexual relationships and conduct by officials at the ATF, the U.S. Marshal Service. Investigators also found that the DEA, ATF, FBI officials sometimes chose not to investigate or report allegations of misconduct. Perhaps most interestingly, a DEA official told Inspector General Horowitz that DEA agents are sometimes allowed to solicit prostitutes while stationed overseas, because the report noted that, according to the DEA policy, prostitution is considered a part of the local culture and is tolerated in certain areas called tolerance zones. So, wow. Good job if you can get it, I suppose. So, tax-funded and drug cartel-funded sex parties for your valiant people out there. What's also important to point out is these are the people who are supposed to be fighting against the drug cartels, not going to parties hosted by them. I guess if you bear in mind the fact that the BATF and probably DEA and probably CIA are probably the three largest parties bringing drugs into the country and transporting drugs around the world, it makes a lot of sense that they would be wanting to have some celebratory parties, but there you go. Somebody asked me last week about this building collapse that happened in Manhattan. There was some details that came out over the weekend regarding that. Apparently, utility workers dispatched back in August to one of the three buildings destroyed in that explosion and fire in Manhattan last week found dangerous gas line connections that created a quote-unquote hazardous condition. This was somebody from Con Edison speaking on Saturday. So the crew sent to the building after a Con Edison worker reading gas meters smelled gas on August 6th in the basement. The basement could hold the key to the cause of the devastation, in which 22 people were injured, 4 critically, and 2 people remain unaccounted for, according to police. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio said on Friday that the blast was possibly tied to someone inappropriately tapping into a gas line. And the owner of a sushi restaurant where the explosion occurred told the New York Times that utility workers determined that gas intended for his restaurant was being siphoned off illegally for use in a newly renovated apartments upstairs. Drury said that the utility workers found multiple leaks on August 6th in hoses that had been connected to the gas lines leading to a restaurant in the building, creating a hazardous situation. He also noted that Con Edison shut off the building's gas for about 10 days until it was determined to be safe. And on Saturday, rescue crews with cadaver dogs clawed their way through smoldering rubble in a search for 2 people still unaccounted for. And authorities said it could take a week of careful digging through the twisted debris, bricks, and splintered wood before the basement is reached. In all, 11 buildings were evacuated, leaving residents of 144 apartments needing places to stay over the weekend. Investigators were looking into whether gas and plumbing work being done privately in one building led to the explosion. 1 hour before the blast, Con Edison utility inspectors had been at the scene and determined that pre-existing work was not satisfactory, but problems were not safety related. According to those, again, an hour before the blast, utility inspectors from Con Edison were in the building. They talk again about the contractor who was identified as Dilber Kushik, who is one of 50 people arrested in February in a sweep of the city by building and housing inspectors. He was accused back then of bribing an undercover investigator to dismiss violations at 2 properties, the Manhattan District Attorney's Office said on Saturday, and he's currently hospitalized right now. Whether or not he was hospitalized as a result of this explosion and collapse, they didn't really make clear in the article. But apparently that's what was going on there in Manhattan, not necessarily a terrorist activity, somebody trying to siphon off some gas from someone else's feed and did not do a good job, and then you get a big explosion and people die and get hurt. So, bringing that one to a close, that's what's going on there. What else is going on? Oh, this is interesting. There was a report that was leaked from the TSA. Secret TSA checklist has now been released, outlining whether or not we are terrorists or not. And the reason I was going to talk about this is because in Aurora, Illinois over the weekend, a couple of National Guardsmen, a National Guardsman and his cousin actually arrested earlier this week for allegedly conspiring to join the Islamic State terrorist group. They attacked this guy or tracked him down to an airport. He was getting ready to fly to Cairo. And then his cousin, who was a 29-year-old, there also in Aurora, was being charged with conspiring to essentially attack the National Guard base where the initial guy was leaving from. Anyway, all crap, more nurtured events basically going on, but they got this guy at the airport. And the reason I was bringing that up, not because it's important that there was another nurtured event that went down, but because they captured this guy at the airport and the TSA had accidentally leaked this secret document about how they can tell if you're a terrorist or not going through the airport. So I just kind of want to point out some of these activities, because I wonder if that's how they caught these guys from Aurora, if these guys, you know, or the guy going to Egypt was going on and doing some of these activities. I don't know. So again, this was obtained exclusively by The Intercept, and it was described in a news story on Friday. But a leaked Transportation Safety Administration document reveals these suspicious signs, which are things that they will they've been trained to look for as airline passengers make their way through U.S. airports in a post-9/11 era. So some of the things that they're looking for that may point out to them that you are, in fact, a terrorist. Number one, excessive yawning. So don't yawn if you're at the airport. Excessive complaints about the screening process, okay? Excessive throat clearing, widely open staring eyes, wearing inappropriate attire for the location. I don't really know. I mean, that means when you get ready to fly to Vegas and they have some freak winter storm and you show up in shorts, you're now inappropriately dressed so you could be a terrorist. I don't know. Whistling as the individual approaches the screening process. So if you're whistling, pretty good chance you're a terrorist. Gazing down or gazing up, either of those qualify. Exaggerating or repetitive grooming gestures. So, you know, forgive anybody out there who's got an obsessive compulsive disorder because you're probably going to be looked at like a terrorist. A pale face from recently shaving a beard. That one I kind of, I guess, maybe agrees with, maybe a little bit, but, or rubbing or wringing of hands. That's what they're looking for, guys. If you're going to the airport, this is part of the spot referral program. This is how they deduct points from you to determine whether or not you're a terrorist. So I don't know. I'm going to whistle a lot through the airports from now on. I didn't realize whistling or gazing down or gazing up or having your eyes wide or yawning were things that qualify now. But that's what they're apparently training the TSA to deal with now. Okay, so moving on. Colorado bill, that's really not that important. What else is going on? 26% of people responding in a Rasmussen poll all believe that Obama should have the authority to ignore federal court rulings and do whatever he wants. So there you go. 1 in 4 people in the United States, just putting it into perspective where we're standing right now with the people that are around you, 1 in 4 believe Barack Obama does not have enough authority to do all the things that he wants to do. So just pointing that out. That was a Rasmussen poll that was released over the weekend. Let's see here. Yeah, we'll talk about this Colorado bill real quick. We gotta give some kudos when kudos are due. So in contrast to Texas's legislation introduced by the state representative Jason Villalaba, that would penalize citizens for filming police activity within a proposed 15-foot area, lawmakers in Colorado have introduced a bill that would penalize police officers for obstructing, seizing, or destroying citizens' records. This House Bill 15-1290 is one of several measures that have been introduced this month in Colorado in an effort to increase police oversight. HB 15-1290 creates a private right of action against a peace officer's employing law enforcement agency if a person records an incident involved in a peace officer and a peace officer destroys the recording or seizes the recording without receiving consent or obtaining a warrant. So essentially what they're saying right now is that if a person is recording a police officer or a peace officer, which is funny that they're calling them peace officers in Colorado, but they do have constitutional sheriffs there, so I guess we have to be all inclusive these days. Man, I wish I lived in a state that had peace officers. Holy cow. Anyway, the person who records a peace officer and the peace officer loses his mind, takes your property, arrests you, does something like that without a warrant, $15,000 civil penalty. Boom. Plus attorney fees and costs. Boom. House Bill 15-1290 is the one that you guys want to support if you're there in Colorado. Love it, love it, love it. And okay, we're moving over into, let's talk a little bit about the economy right now. We're again going to be joined by Mr. Jim Willey here in about 15 minutes. So we'll have plenty of things to talk about there. Already totally forgot. Truth gave me the BDI number. Let's see if I can scroll way back up and find it. I can't remember what it was. And of course my feed is dead. So I won't give you that one today. Apologize about that. Dow is up, like big time up, almost 300 points up today. 17,984. S&P following suit, 2,074 on the S&P. The DAX is also up 217 points today. Dollar index is rising again, 98.29 on the dollar index. Euro taking a little bit of a drop today, a little more than 0.5%, but we're still at 108.21. Again, Baltic Dry, I thought he said that was up over 600, but I'm not sure right now. Pardon me. Silver, excuse me, hang on one second here. Oh, I had a frog in my throat there. Gold, sitting right now, $11.84, down $16 or down 1.39% today. Silver sitting at $16.62. $16.62 will get you bright, shiny ounce of silver today. And let's look real quick and see what, come on, computer, work with me here. Let's see what the oil is at right now. Crude oil, still pretty flat, 48.94, so really not much of a move there. A little bit of movement around the markets. Obviously, the Dow going kind of crazy. Definitely interested in finding out why that would be from Mr. Jim Willey in just a few minutes here. So also some this is kind of a vague story that came out over the weekend, and I'm not sure. Hopefully, Jim will touch on this when we get in into this interview. But central banks in the world's biggest currency markets will publish today principles of behavior and ethics for foreign exchange trading, according to a person familiar with the document. The global preamble, codes of best market practice and shared global principles, which was inspired by a Financial Stability Board proposal in September, was ratified after consultations in 8 markets around the world, according to the person who asked not to be identified because, again, these talks are private. This to me sounds a whole lot like a new sheriff coming into town, ladies and gentlemen. So listen to this too. The global move is supposed to improve standards of behavior as part of an overhaul after allegations about traders colluding to rig rates in the $5.3 trillion a day currency market. And the list of principles was the first item for discussion at the annual global meetings of foreign exchange committees that was held by the Bank of Japan on Monday. According to an agenda posted on the Federal Reserve Bank of New York's website, the delivery of these principles is on schedule after the consultation period, which was slated to end this month. The proposal was circulated to local foreign exchange market committees managed by central banks in Australia, Canada, Hong Kong, Britain, New York, Singapore, Tokyo, and the ECB, which have backed the preamble. In London, I thought this was an interesting sentence here. In London, the world's biggest currency market, the Bank of England's Foreign Exchange Joint Standing Committee was presented the principles at a meeting on March 18th by the BOE's head of foreign exchange, Michael Cross. What that tells me is that, again, in London, which is the world's largest currency market, the Bank of England's Foreign Exchange Joint Standing Committee was given a new set of rules, right? Somebody came in there, Michael Cross here, case in point, which is the Bank of England's head of foreign exchange, didn't go in there and say, hey, we think you guys ought to deal with this. Said, this is what it's going to be. These are the new principles. This is what's going on now. We're changing the entire name of the game. And all of this was supposed to happen today. What that's going to do to the currency markets, I don't know. I really don't have any idea. But I guarantee you that Jim Willey does. And he will be, again, joining us here in about 8 minutes. So just kind of getting away from that. Again, new global currency standards being sent out across the world over the weekend, and very little coverage of it, very little coverage. And again, you know, this news article right from Bloomberg is pretty vague. They're not even really talking about what exactly is going on. Obviously, they're trying to keep this stuff kind of under their hat, but I don't know. I'm starting to believe that new days are here, and it's starting to make me wonder what exactly is going on under the foundation today. You know what I mean? Okay. He is ready to go. Rock and roll. All right. Also, let's talk a little bit about Greece right now, since we are talking about economics and things like that. The international rating agency Fitch has now downgraded Greece's sovereign rating from B to CCC ahead of the agency's next scheduled review. amid worries that the country is defaulting on its sovereign debt. There was also supposed to be more of these Greece referendums. There were supposed to be essentially by today a list of measures that Greece was supposed to have ready for its creditors. And Greece essentially sent this list to its creditors over the weekend, and the creditors looked at it and said, this looks like a bunch of crap that you wrote down on cocktail napkins. This is really just a list. These aren't programs. There's no way. You got no program here. You got nothing going on. All you really have is just a list of stuff that would be nice. You know, plant trees made of money. That's not really an idea that we can put into effect. So again, Greece is still really on the outs right now, and we're starting to wonder what the European Commission and the IMF and the ECB are really going to be doing here coming up in the future. There's supposed to be 3 billion euros heading towards Athens over the next few weeks if they can get all this stuff ironed out. But again, I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think the Grexit thing is still a likely indicator. And if you look at the bond markets right now, a lot of people in the bond markets are believing that as well. What else is happening? So we had the downgrade of Greece there by Fitch. They probably don't care. Target ramping up their rapid exodus from Canada. They're going to be about a month ahead of schedule. So by mid-April, they will have closed all 133 locations in the country there. So that's what's going on in the Canadian economy. I'm just kind of bouncing through this stuff here real quick because I don't want to go too in-depth on economic stuff with Jim right there waiting in the wings. Okay, so we'll hop back over to some tech stuff here real quick. U.S. defense contractor Lockheed Martin has won a contract from the U.S. Department of Defense to build precision weapons targeting pods for the U.S. Air Force worth about $500 million, so that's a good deal. Pods are called the Sniper. They use an electro-optical and infrared imaging system that comes in a lightweight, compatible casing and uses the latest precision-guided weapons. They are then fixed to the bottom of an aircraft and can detect air-to-ground and air-to-air targets. So Lockheed Martin, the war industry, fully in effect still, and lots of money to be made still by blowing people up. So that's good. Well, we're just about out of time here, guys. I'll tell you, there's a lot more science and tech stuff. Nothing really all that interesting today. Google's got some pedestrian airbags that they're putting on the front of their vehicles, which I think is kind of stupid because obviously by the time these self-driving vehicles get here, we won't need airbags on the front of them because they'll be good enough to drive around. Volvo kind of making some fun of Google's vehicle there, saying, you know, we're just going to focus on brakes, making sure our brakes work and not going to run into people. But anyway, more science and stuff there on redpillreports.com. You can go check that out. There's some health stuff in there as well. Probably some of it a little bit important, but just couldn't get to it today, guys. Sorry about that. We got Jim Willie joining us here in just a few minutes. Keep it here, guys. This is going to be interesting stuff. Appreciate you guys hanging out. We'll be right back. 3-minute break, guys.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken. But it hasn't. It failed. We still go on because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. It is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent, and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book, Our Universal Journey. Go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au.
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee by Judith Baker. Special JFK 50th Anniversary Signed Limited Edition. $30 including shipping. Limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
The wicked ones obviously under heavy Masonic influence.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. And thank you all hanging out in the chat room right now. Appreciate you guys being there at truthfrequencyradio.com. Very, very excited today, ladies and gentlemen, to be bringing a very special guest to the program. We've got so many things geopolitically and economically going on around the world. We try and bring you guys the most up-to-the-date insight that we can do it, And I gotta be honest, Jim Willies, right at the top of this list, ladies and gentlemen. Jim Willies, the editor of the Hat Trick newsletter, which you can find on goldenjackass.com. You can also find a link to Golden Jackass from redpillreports.com at the top of the page today. Jim, thank you very much for joining us on the Red Pill Reports today.
Oh, it's a pleasure being on.
Well, very, very excited to have you here. Obviously, so much to talk about right now. It seems like every day there's some kind of new geopolitical development or new economic development, some kind of change taking place. Where would you like to start today with such a full plate of things going on? What do you think is the most important place to start today, sir?
The dismantling of the platforms that support the whole U.S. dollar global financial structures.
Okay.
Should I go ahead then? Okay. All right. In the last 2.5 weeks, we've seen a cavalcade. It's been Australia, Britain, Italy, France, and Germany deciding to sign up for the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank.
Yes.
It's basically a replacement for the World Bank. And this is all amidst U.S. government pressure not to do so. They even, Obama, very limp-wristed manners, called Britain catering to the Chinese. That wasn't the end of it. Luxembourg, Switzerland, and now Japan have signed up. In the last few days, Turkey, Netherlands, Austria, and South Korea have signed up. I remember just a week ago in my March issue of the Hat Trick Letter, the paid report, I said this is game over if Japan and South Korea sign up, because those are the stalwart Asian members that have been towing the U.S. line. They're practically captured nations occupied by the U.S. military.
Right.
We've got game over here. This is game over for the U.S. dollar platforms. Finally, the U.S. government tossed in the towel. There was a picture of a sheepish Obama. And, you know, I study body language. I read a fascinating book, also handwriting analysis when I was in college. I had a good friend who was expert in that. Obama looked like he was a defeated player sitting uninvited at a table with no role. That's what it looked like when President Xi of China was in control, like, you know, commanding the gavel. Mm-hmm. So the U.S. is now limiting damage and trying to avoid more extreme isolation, and I don't think they're going to be able to avoid a great deal of isolation. Notice that in the last few months and couple of years, it's been very evident that the West dominates banking, but the East dominates commerce. And, you know, it's bound to happen because in the 80s, we had the beginning of the outsourcing movement to the Eastern locations, whether it's Asia or India or even South America. There was, the NAFTA with Mexico for a while. Mm-hmm. So what we're seeing is a tremendous outsourcing backfire that's leading to the dismantling of the dollar, the rejection of the dollar in global trade, and the reinstallation of the gold standard. This is just unbelievable irony. And the gold standard is going to return through the trade settlement ramps.
What's a trade settlement ramp, if you could clarify?
Well, two nations have trade, and they need to settle up the trade. Mm-hmm. So they do so on the payment ramps.
Oh, okay.
What currency do they use? Well, they're not using the dollar very much anymore. The oil world is using the dollar, but less so recently. So you're seeing resistance in the forex and banking communities for anything but the dollar. So the dollar is continuing in the financial sector, forex, the foreign exchange currencies, mm-hmm. and the banking reserves. They continue to be dollar-based. But the gold standard is going to come by way of trade, the trade ramps, settling in bilateral trade. Increasingly, you're seeing the RMB, the Chinese currency, used more and more, and mm-hmm. the dollar via its treasury vehicle, U.S. Treasury vehicle, being rejected. So the entire set of foundation platforms is being dismantled for the dollar. This is, you don't even get this emphasis in the U.S. and Western press. The IMF is basically discredited. The World Bank is basically not really much of a player anymore.
Okay.
And in replacement, you're getting a whole series of new Chinese designed, Eastern and BRICS supported platforms, and put them all together, and you get a giant gold standard platform. And I made a joke with a friend last night. I said, they can't kill the dollar, so what they're going to do is remove the stage that Uncle Sam's dollar is standing on. So the dollar is just going to fall down on the stage as it collapses. In full global view. So let's review quickly what these platforms are. There's the New Development Bank by the BRICS.
Okay.
And I asked the question, well, if there's a new Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank that's even talking about African projects, then what's the New Development Bank going to be? Because it's clearly not about development.
Okay.
And I conclude that it is going to be the office to convert treasuries and other sovereign bonds into gold bullion. It's going to be the conversion center for the BRICS Gold Central Bank. All right, then they've got the Crisis Reserve Account. They call it the CRA. And that's to avoid financial crises. Because what is the U.S. expert at but causing meltdowns, hot money movements?
Yep.
We're not going to be seeing a repeat of the 1998 Asian meltdown because they're going to have – the East is going to set up their crisis reserve account. Then you have the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. I think it's going to be primarily development of Asia. There's a lot of talk about how they need something like $50 or $80 billion a year in infrastructure, railroads, highways, port facilities, bridges, you name it. If they get a quarter of that, it would be a miracle, but – you see the need there. Mm-hmm. I think the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank and the New Development Bank are both misnomers. By that I mean false names. The new development bank, as I said, is going to be the BRICS Gold Central Bank, and the Asian Infrastructure Bank is going to be the development bank globally. Then you've got the Shanghai Gold Exchange, which has already wrestled control from London of the gold fix.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are participants of London banks in it, but I think it's more like keep your enemy close.
Right. That makes sense, yeah.
Let them watch what you're doing. Make sure they don't escape the room. Put them on a straitjacket. Okay, and there's also the RMB-based gold futures contract that's imminent, probably this year. I think it's going to be in a few months, in Shanghai. RMB-based gold futures contract that delivers gold metal and is priced in RMB, the Chinese currency. Two big, big, big changes compared to what London and New York do.
Right.
They don't deliver in metal, mm-hmm. and they price in dollars. Okay. It's like, this is like upending the tables in the temple. The East is also developing their rating agencies for debt. The Dagong and the Russians have another. The Chinese have a very popular UnionPay, which is almost as big as MasterCard and Visa combined.
Mm-hmm.
And the Russians have their own entry. And now the Chinese just came up with chips. The CIPS, it's a SWIFT bank transaction alternative. Bank-to-bank transfers. So with all these, all these pressures by the United States and sanctions and dictates and Ukraine war and trade union that they set up, like the Trans-Pacific Partnership for the Asians and the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership for the Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to force these down their throat. By the way, our trade partnerships are nothing but corporate power grabs, extreme power grabs, to control patent, to control internet content, to control resolution of disputes. Oof. Gosh, so the Asians and the Europeans are basically saying, we don't want your TPP or TTIP, shove them up your ass. And we're going to go with the Chinese-led series of platforms. I think China joined the International Monetary Fund to watch over its death and to make sure that it gets converted into a fecal outhouse. And the World Bank, that's just going to wither away. I think the rodent-type rats are going to replace the human-type rats in a matter of time. And, when you've got these big Asian-led development funds, what's the IMF and World Bank going to do? I'll tell you what the IMF is going to do. They're going to continue what they've done for the last year or more and be the platform office, more like an office, to assure that failed and defaulting sovereign government debt can easily be converted into actions of asset seizures. So the IMF is not about development anymore. It's about asset seizures by the banking elite. So I think that's the most important topic of the day.
Mm-hmm.
The undermining of the dollar platforms and the rise of the new Asian platforms.
I'm wondering, too, if you could touch on, since we had the article today talking about the new currency, the currency rules, this new ethical, does that have to do with all of this as well? Is that just part of this program? They're kind of basically sliding in a new sheriff at this point?
I'm not sure with the concept you're describing.
Oh, there was a Bloomberg article this morning talking about new currency regulations that were supposedly going to go out today. It was, essentially the global system effectively going under the new ethical guidelines. And I was curious about whether or not that tied into the trading platforms, changing hands and things like that.
Oh, probably to try to discourage the new Asian platforms from coming into view.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I don't buy the reform concept.
Okay.
Period. There's really no IMF reform that's going to come that will stick. There's a von Mises. This is the Austrian school of money, school of economics. there's an axiom that you cannot replace a failed paper money system with a reformed paper version of the same. It has to be gold.
Okay, so then really fundamentally what we're talking about is a switch to a global backed or asset backed currency, including everyone except for us. Is that essentially where we're at right now, and the United States is going to have to do something to react to that? Is that kind of what we're outlining here?
It's really not clear, but I have my own theory that the United States is going to come up with a fraudulent hard asset backed currency. A new Scheiss dollar, I call it. Scheiss is that's the closest German word you can find for shit. The U.S. will come up with its version of a Scheiss dollar,
okay,
and talk about asset backing of it, like mineral and oil deposits, gas deposits, and deep storage gold. Well, notice that the energy component of that asset backing has just cratered in value.
Absolutely.
The oil. And then they're going to be stuck with defending in independent audits the deep storage gold, which, what a farce that is.
Okay. Okay.
So the U.S. is going to post a fraudulent Scheiss dollar and claim it's gold backed and asset backed. And I think it's going to be stripped on stage in global view as naked and unbacked by anything except our arrogance, our hot air, and our military.
And what do you think the dollar index is going to look like on that day, since we're on the subject?
I don't know.
Some people kind of predict like a fall back to about 70, but I'm just curious if you feel like...
I don't know, and I don't care. I mean, even more important, I don't care. Why should I care about its relative value to other paper crap currencies?
Makes sense. That makes sense.
I care about what the dollar's going to be worth versus gold.
Right.
I care about what the euro is going to be worth versus gold. All these countries are printing money with reckless abandon. What is their currency going to be worth relative to gold? And the argument that there's not enough gold to go around to cover all the money is nonsense and propaganda. It's easy to cover it with gold. You increase the gold price tenfold. You cannot have the dollar and the Fed increasing by 400% their reserves on the balance sheet without seeing a 4 to 5-fold increase in the gold price, and that's what's coming quickly.
Do you think that's going to be a result of all these various control platforms being handed over, or is that just is it going to be a longer term, you know, a longer term timeline?
I don't know. I'm not privy to what China's doing
right in
Shanghai. I know they now have the capability with the wrestled control of the gold fix. I know they're going to have extreme capability when they have a gold delivery on an RMB-priced gold futures contract in Shanghai. What are they going to do with it? That's the better question. I don't know the timetable because I don't know how quickly they're going to do it. I heard a while ago, like 2 years ago, 3 years ago from The Voice, the Chinese are going to do extreme things with the gold price and upend all the tables of the West when they can no longer source and purchase more gold at this cheap price. So those are the key questions.
Okay. What do we want to talk about the petrodollar some too, since we're on about this gold and the kind of the demise of the only asset that we've really got to back our money, if we were to talk about that kind of going down the wayside right now? What are your impressions of the petrodollar and its demise or potential demise, sir?
The petrodollar, I think, began its fracture in 2014. I think it was pretty clear when King Abdullah was pretty much stuck on his deathbed. He's gone now, but there's some unknown factors involved. It's been widely said that the U.S. government is throwing the Saudis under the bus. Now, one way of their doing that is by stealing their gold in the Swiss banks. This is not in the news. The Arabs and the Saudis are not our friends. They were our agents and our tools for the petrodollar standard. Notice that in 71, we broke the gold standard, commonly called the Bretton Woods Accord.
Mm-hmm.
71, we broke it. In 73, there was the Arab embargo, and suddenly Kissinger engineered by suggesting, not the Arabs demanding, he suggested to the Arabs that they do an oil embargo and quadruple the oil price. Okay, so just 2 years passed with a vacuum of no standard behind the dollar. Now I think this whole petrodollar system has been wrecked. And you've noticed that starting last summer, June, July, August, September, right in there, we started seeing the U.S. dollar index start to rise. It's not because the dollar is stronger. It's because it's dying. It's not because the dollar is worth more. It's because everything else is worth less. The system is being destroyed. And all the different apparatus elements behind the petrodollar are being broken. And in a very, very loud way. I bring up one incident in early 2009 following Lehman. Remember the oil price went from 110 down to 40, roughly.
Right.
That's not because you had a 60% decline in demand for oil. It's because the derivatives were temporarily broken. Oil is not determined in its price by supply and demand. Period. It's determined by the architects and maestros who control the derivatives, the paper contracts, the euro versus oil forex contract derivative,
okay,
the dollar versus oil forex contract derivative. These are not supply and demand concepts and dynamics.
Right.
So it's all fracturing. And as it fractures, they liquidate the contracts, and the bankers say, well, we need some dollars to settle those contracts. We need to get some dollars. So the dollar goes up from the demand at the banking centers behind the teller windows, not the ones that you see. It's the bank to bank. I like to say these derivatives are like a fast-moving whirling dervish
okay.
of no mass. But they move so fast that they appear to have mass. And that mass is the fictional asset base of the banking system for the West that's totally insolvent. There's no basis, no foundation.
Hmm.
So the U.S. dollar and oil dynamics are subject to derivative price controls, and they're in a breakdown mode. We were told that the U.S. economy is going to have a big benefit from this oil sector price discount.
That's right. Unambiguous benefits. That's what I heard.
Not happening.
Not seem to be.
Retail's going down. In fact, this is the year you're going to see several retail chains, including Sears, go bust and make a lot of news.
Ooh, that's a big call. Sears going down.
Well, they've already told us it's in progress. All you have to do is read.
Right.
And ignore the propaganda. I like to read the details and forget the headlines, because the headlines are all garbage. This is the year of shale bonds in the oil sectors going bust, and we've already seen the beginning. We've got something like $2 trillion worth of shale-based oil subprime bonds. And I raise the point, if we've already been through the mortgage subprime bonds, and now we're experiencing the distress of car sale.
Yes.
Subprime bonds. And we all know the overhang of the $2.4 trillion in student loan subprime bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got the oil sector subprime bonds, and you've got QE supporting the U.S. Treasury subprime bonds. I ask the question, what part of the U.S. financial structure is not subprime bond? And therefore, is it not the case that the U.S. economy is a Ponzi scheme? Okay, this is where we're heading because of the breakdown of the petrodollar. You know, China welcomes the lower price because they're still doing economic expansion. We're not. We're stuck in this 2 to 4% annual recession for 5 straight years. Called a depression, people.
Yep.
Now, we talk about how we're wounding the Russian bear and bringing down their income source. Not really. Since when does the United States control the oil price when the derivatives are all fracturing based on the sabotage that the Saudis are doing? The Saudis are in control of driving down the price. The Saudis are the main producers, and they wanted low-cost producers, and they wanted to destroy this is almost funny. They wanted to destroy the marginal producer of oil. Here's a fact that most people don't know. Since 2007, of all the new marginal increase of oil output globally, 85% is from shale projects.
Wow.
So the Saudis wanted to kill it, and they did. They yeah. have succeeded. So this is Saudi vengeance against the Anglo-Americans who have stolen their gold in Switzerland. And now the Saudis are giving them lip service. And now a very interesting thing is happening. I call it the wrinkle. The Saudis have walked right into a trap in Yemen set by Iran. Just like Europe walked right into the Ukraine trap set by Putin and Russia. So the U.S. and the West and Europe is becoming a serial moron walking into traps set by the East. Serial moron. We're going to lose Europe over this.
Wow.
So, well, it's already happening. I made a forecast last June that Germany's going to flip, turn East, join the Eurasian trade zone, abandon the Euro common currency. Big question upcoming. What are they going to do with the Ramstein Air Force Base? That's the main NATO air base in all of Europe.
Yeah, that's a great question.
They're an occupied nation. I don't know what they're going to do. I think they're going to encourage the United States to leave, but right now they're fortifying it. Now, this is a set of new pacts where the Russians are controlling the oil price with Saudi help, and it's going to be priced in RMB. We're going to see something happen by the end of the year. I don't like making direct forecasts of when the gold price is going to be such and such. I make direct forecasts of what I study, and I don't even watch the gold price for over 2 years. I make direct forecasts of the fact that gold is going to be priced in RMB currency, Chinese terms, and the oil price is eventually going to be priced. I'm sorry. Pardon me. I'm getting over a cold. The oil market is eventually, I think this year, going to be priced in Russian ruble and Chinese RMB.
Wow. Okay. We got to take a quick 3 minute break. Our guest today is the one and only Jim Willie. You can find him at thegoldenjackass.com. We've got to take this 3 minute break. Appreciate you guys all hanging out. When we come back, I want to talk more about this Saudi vengeance against our shale industry and also this potential shift towards everything being paid for in renminbi and how quickly we think we can all get there. Keep it right here, guys. 3 minute break. We'll be right back. This is, of course, the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. See you in a second.
Hey, Big Mouth. Yeah, you. Listen, I want you to put the word out on the street. Tell your coworkers, your family, your paisanos, that my good friend, Joe Joseph, is doing a good thing here. He's sticking his neck out for me, for Sil, and for all the people in the world. Isn't that right, Sil?
He's part of the family now, Deej.
That's what I thought. So tune in to him. Right here on Freedom Link, Monday to Friday, exclusively on the Truth Frequency Radio. Yeah, they're watching you. Big deal. They're watching me too. They're watching everybody. So grow some cojones and give them something to watch and listen to. Make them earn it. Give them paperwork until they choke. That's right. I know you won't let me down. So you're going to put the word out about my good friend, Joe Joseph, right? Good. Now do me a favor and get out of here.
After work, I'm so tired that I want to be left alone to sleep.
Hey, listen to me.
Who are you?
I'm you years ago when you felt healthy and young and everything worked on your body. Do you remember that?
Yes. I wish I felt like that now.
You can feel like that again with a new microplant powder formulation called Iodine Now. It cleans the entire body from head to toe and feeds the body what it really needs. You'll be in a better mood and you'll find more drive in your romantic life. Really? I gotta try iodine now and feel good again. It also protects you from radiation, heavy metals, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including cancer and most major diseases. You'll be amazed. You can be your own doctor. I want to keep you out of the hospital and off pharmaceuticals. Wow. Why are you so nice to me? Because I'm you. You're out of shape, and I need a better-looking future.
Call 888-910-4367. That's 888-910-4367. Iodine Now. Only at MUSA.org.
We all know the importance of having storable foods. But what about when the food runs out? What then? For real food independence, you need a supply of non-hybrid seeds. Introducing the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. The Survival Seed Vault is sealed for freshness and includes 20 varieties of easy-to-grow non-hybrid seeds for only $37.95. For less than $40, you've got real food independence. And the Survival Seed Vault includes detailed planting and seed-saving instructions. Imagine the barter power you'll have when the food supply does collapse. Right now, save $9 instantly when you buy three or more Survival Seed Vaults from MyPatriotSupply.com. Same day shipping on all orders, plus free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness products at MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys very much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. My very special guest today is Mr. Jim Willie. He is the editor of the Hat Trick newsletter and can be found on goldenjackass.com. Before the break, Jim, we were talking about Saudis essentially taking vengeance against the United States and against the shale industry here. Is there anything else you wanted to kind of cover on that topic? You mentioned the fact that Saudi Arabia had kind of walked into a trap in Yemen, which kind of perked my ears up. Could you maybe extrapolate on that just a few seconds, if you would, sir?
Yes. I'm not a military expert, but I will say that the U.S., with all of its different color revolutions, is inviting extreme blowback. And the revolution in Ukraine, how should I say, not going well?
Doesn't seem to be.
Okay, well, that was supposed to be a showcase for how wonderful the fascist state can be.
Right.
Okay, well, right now there are a lot of arms, weapons, U.S.-made weapons, that are running around circulating in Yemen.
Yeah, half a billion dollars worth we apparently just left over there.
Yeah, well, they're now in the wrong hands, and my joke, when I heard that there was a railroad carrying maybe 50 different tanks and armored carriers in Europe heading to the Ukraine front. Right. My joke was, how many days before they're in the wrong hands?
It's a great question.
And this is the problem when you conduct these color revolutions that are not with a popular base. They're with a base out of Nangley.
Right.
Funded by narcotics.
Mm-hmm.
So we now are in a very dangerous stage where both Syria and Ukraine have wars that are funded by narcotics, not by the Pentagon budget. And Yemen, I think, is going to be the third where they attempt to lay waste on Saudi Arabia. It will also be eventually an ISIS kind of war funded by narcotics. Now, people might not know much about narcotics, but I will quote the United Nations Task Force, the Drug Task Force. They've come out with two reports in the last few years saying that the New York banks would have been busted, broken, and killed off, I mean like liquidated,
right,
dead, if not for the narco money laundering. This is the United Nations Independent Task Force concluding. So we got a trap in Yemen, and the Saudis walked into it. Iran laid the trap. Iran is about as smart in tactics as the Russians. I don't think Iran plays chess like the Russians, but they've got a good friend with the Russians, and I think that they're sharing some very good tactics. The Saudis are going to fall. And, you know, you cannot have the petrodollar go away without the Saudis doing something very smart to stay on their feet in a nimble way. And that better be to convert to RMB pricing of oil.
Right.
Firming up their Chinese ties and stopping the funding of terrorism against the Russian ally of Syria. The bad guy in the region is the Saudis. They're funding terrorism along with Langley and their narco money. I'd like to point out in conclusion for this addendum question. The U.S. did not lower the oil price to wound Russia. That's a moronic concept full of propaganda and horse pucky.
Okay.
Since when would Wall Street and the U.S. government lay waste and attack the Rockefeller Fortress? I got news for you. The Rockefellers have abandoned in the West 80% of their oil assets. They've sold them.
Hmm.
Here's a pair of details regarding Rockefellers and Russia. In the full year 2014, the Rockefellers lost $1 billion in business in Russia for their contracted projects, like the Arctic, the Kara Sea. The Kara Sea is just a subsea in the Arctic. The Arctic is an ocean. You know, it's ice covered, but it's still an ocean.
Right.
All right. So the Rockefellers lost $1 billion on their contracts. Well, gee. Take a closer look with a magnifying glass. Stop reading the U.S. BS propaganda. Do a little research like a responsible analyst, and you come up with the fact that the Rockefellers increased by 450% their investment base in Russian claims in the year 2014.
Okay.
That's like 4 or 5-fold increase.
Right.
Mm-hmm. During sanctions? So is it the case that sanctions don't apply to the Rockefellers?
Well, that's a good question. I would assume that the answer to that would be yes, but
I mean. Well, remember in a very high profile way, they abandoned the Kara Sea project and made a big deal about it.
Right.
So I reason that the sanctions is about operations, not investment.
Ooh. All right.
Now, here's a concluding detail that'll blow you away. I've got in my Hattrick Letter report, I think I put it in a public article as well, the Rockefellers now have square miles and square kilometer land claims in Russia that total more than their land claims in the United States.
Okay.
All right. So, how's the petrodollar doing?
Great question.
Yeah. All right. How are the sanctions holding up?
Seem to be ineffective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So are we going to lose Europe over this? Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. Definitely. And watch Germany. We got a little bit on Germany to cover coming up, but let's move along here.
Yeah. Let's talk about, since we're already talking about the rise of the RMB, how does that relate to the quantitative easing that's going on, you know, globally at this point?
Well, I think it, the QE really put all the Eastern nations on alert. It told them, we're going to undermine your banking system reserves. You may have 3 decades of outsourcing and industrial expansion and savings, but we're going to undermine it with drips of acid, and we're going to call it QE, and we're going to even tell you that it's stimulus. But we're going to ruin your entire asset base in your banking systems. This is what the U.S. is telling the East with QE. We're going to engage in hyper-monetary inflation, and we're going to tell everybody it's good. We're going to do bond monetization, do it in an unsterilized manner, which means we're not going to drain funds elsewhere in the banking system as we cover the treasury bonds, you know, like a favored son among bonds, among the subprime garbage, toxic bonds. So we're going to put this acid drip on your banking system reserves and tell you it is good. So they amplified and accelerated their global de-dollarization in response. They amplified their usage of RMB swap facilities to handle bilateral trade. I call it the trade ramps. They're settling their trade in non-dollar, outside the dollar. They're doing so in Chinese currency.
Okay.
If a good portion of the global manufacturing comes from China, doesn't it make sense to use their currency?
Yes.
Yes. All right. So while also the dollar is going up in exchange rate, I don't say in value, in exchange rate, all the emerging market debt, which is priced in dollars, is going up in the burden. So while the Eastern nations are avoiding the dollar due to QE as a motivator, they're also noticing that their debt, in the, especially the minor nations, the secondary nations, that debt burden is going to blow up. So if we don't see a Greek or Ukraine debt blow up that hits the Western banks and cripples them, we're going to see it from emerging markets. And I don't know that this crisis reserve account is going to be adequate. I said before, we're not going to see another Asian meltdown. We might see a few targeted nations go bust, with maybe China and Russia overseeing it with a motive to bring attention to the toxic dollar. Oh, this is getting extremely nasty. We have twin pillars of the U.S. dollar. And it's the QE to infinity. Notice all the taper talk. That was just trial balloon nonsense.
Right.
And now they're continuing with the trial balloon nonsense, even though it was rather emphatic that they cannot do that for derivative destruction reasons. They will not stop QE. But we've got a second pillar in its endless war to defend the dollar. I made comments when I started this newsletter in 2004 and 5 that in the end game, at the end of the dollar's reign of terror, you're going to see war used to defend the dollar, and war in an open way. It's now in an open way, but the propaganda is still there. They're trying to say that, you know, Ukraine is to punish Russia for invading Crimea.
Right.
When all they did was moved in to take their naval base and secure it and immediately conduct a referendum where 95 or 97% said, yes, we want to join Russia. I don't call that an invasion. I call what the U.S. did to topple the regime with a $6 billion budget that even Victoria Nuland admitted.
Yes.
I think that's an invasion. So the East understands the invasion, and the East is taking action. The action they're taking is to discard the dollar and to work around on the trade ramps, trade settlement. So as trade settlement is more uniformly non-dollar, you will see the Western banks and the allies of the West in Asia, mainly Japan and Korea, Taiwan. Taiwan's a remarkable little country. It's the richest per capita, I think, in the world. They've just got all kinds of patents and manufacturing and all kinds of ownership of exported manufacturing. Hong Kong, Taiwan, South Korea, and Japan have big banking systems. And they're going to start diversifying out of the dollar when it becomes clear that the dollar's not being used on the trade ramps for trade settlement. Okay, these are the big consequences of QE and war. Notice that Canada has two RMB centers now, Toronto and Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
So their trade is not going to be using the dollar right in our backyard. Los Angeles now with ICBC Bank, which
That's
is
right.
the biggest bank in the world.
Mm-hmm.
They now have an RMB trading center, Los Angeles. But the two biggest are in the heart of the West. It's really European. I don't buy into this argument that England is not Europe. Obviously it's Europe. I mean, okay, I'm ignorant. I'm calling it Europe. It certainly is not the New World of okay. North America. It's not South America. London's not Asia. So what is it? Just unique? It's a unique power center for global colonialism exploit of Oceania, as George Orwell described. Yeah, I think it's pretty much where it is. There are two RMB hubs now in the heart of Europe, in London and Frankfurt.
Mm-hmm.
Now, an RMB trading hub is for two things. Bond issuance, like McDonald's has corporate bonds in RMB. And the second function, not just corporate bonds, but government bonds. Pardon me, I have to get some water. I'm in trouble.
Yep, no problem.
All right. China wants to sell government bonds in London and Frankfurt. That's Germany, by the way, for people who think Frankfurt might be a suburb of Italy. I mean, Jay Leno exposes the stupidity. What's the capital of Germany? France?
G?
Right. What continent is Vietnam in? I don't know. Okay. Frankfurt is the financial center of Germany.
Yes.
London is a gigantic Western financial center, and now it hosts an RMB trading hub center. So, do you think London and the British are realizing the writing on the wall that the dollar is history, Germany ditto, and that they don't want to be isolated like the United States is? The United States is going to be isolated from even Mexico, Central America, and Canada.
Wow.
This is very late in the game. So when the globe decides the dollar's not going to be the main item used in trade settlement and our banking systems don't need the treasury bonds anymore, the United States is going to have a very severe problem. How do we bring in imports? Because half the U.S. economy is reliant and dependent upon income, imports. How is the U.S. and their giant, say, retail chains and their industrial fragments that have Chinese and other Asian and other, you know, non-U.S. supply chains, how are they going to be supplied if the globe doesn't want their treasury bills as payment? And that is precisely the flashpoint when the U.S. realizes we need urgently to use our treasury bonds and treasury bills to buy gold trade notes. In other words, bid up gold with the dollar.
Right.
So where is gold going to make its impact on the major platforms? In trade settlement that will require gold trade notes as letters of credit. And then the U.S. is going to be really stuck, and they're going to have to launch a new currency because no one's going to want the toxic dollar anymore. And that's when you're going to come up with this false asset back that we talked about with, you know, energy reserves and deep storage gold. And the requirement will be global, independent audit, and the U.S. will not pass muster.
Wow.
And that's when you're going to see whatever is used in the domestic, probably lower 48 states, whatever is used as currency is going to suffer, I think, a 70% decline.
And you're still, are you still putting end of this year kind of on that as a timeline?
I think before the end of this year, we're going to see rather distinct messages that trade is not going to be popular in the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And banking systems are not going to see the wisdom of continuing to hold treasuries.
Mm-hmm.
By this year. It's very hard to know because, as I like to say, you don't know where Washington and Langley are going to launch a new war that disrupts the timetable.
Right.
And you don't know when the Kenyan squatter is going to order a first strike nuclear hit like he did 2 weeks ago.
So, did you buy into that? I mean, do you feel like we were really on the cusp there over the weekend? And, a lot of underground news sources seem to carry that story quite a bit, but you didn't see a lot in the mainstream.
Why should you? Langley controls it.
Right.
Well, yeah, I buy into it. Of course I do. It's obvious.
Wow. That's just startling to think that we could have been that close, you know?
Well, you need to wake up. People need to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
We're that close, yes. The neocons need a proper name, neo-Nazi. The Bush, Brzezinski, Kissinger gang, they're neo-Nazis.
Right.
They're the American Nazis, okay? They're neo-Nazis. Listen to my words. They're neo-Nazis. And they love war. They're not about commerce. They're not about cooperation. They're about domination, control, and war. Notice that Clinton dismissed over 100 generals because they were not loyal to the narcos.
Right.
They were loyal to the Constitution, so he dismissed them. Bush, baby Bush, dismissed another 100 or so, 150 generals.
Hmm.
Because they also were not loyal to the narcos. They were loyal to the Constitution, so they had to go. So the man who claimed change we can believe in, the squatter, is continuing in this. I don't look at words. I don't look at the figurehead like Kerry or Hillary. I look at the guys, men and women behind them. Are they the same neocon neo-Nazis? And the answer is yes.
Right.
There have been two major incidents in the last year. One was an ordered hit of a nuke of South Carolina. It was disobeyed, and there were several generals fired, retired. And then 2 weeks ago, there were 5 attempts to press the button on Russia, and all 5 were thwarted. Why was Hagel dismissed as the CIA director? Why was Hagel dismissed? I may have his post unclear. Was he dismissed as defense secretary or? I think he was dismissed as defense secretary.
I believe he was, yeah, because he's the one who put this the new procedure in, which
yes,
yeah, okay, the new PAL.
He put in a new procedure for launch codes,
mm-hmm,
that Obama did not approve, so Obama fired him, and then Obama tried 5 times to press the button on Russia for first strike nuclear hits. All 5 were stopped, so the woman Admiral Rice, I think her name was fired like the other 400 generals and admirals. Well, here's the alarming fact. We're getting off the track of finance here, but I'm going to close with this. There's a movement called America First. They have regular and frequent monthly meetings in Idaho. It's all the dismissed generals and admirals since the Clinton, Bush, and Obama administrations. They're not dead.
Right.
They're all collecting very generous pensions. I knew one guy, one man in my life. It was the father of a woman that I was pursuing in Lexington, Massachusetts. Marcia, lovely Marcia. Her father was a retired major from NORAD, and he was earning $55,000 a year. as a retired major, and this was the early 90s.
Right.
So they're probably now, a major rank is probably retiring in the 70,000 range, because we have inflation that we don't admit to.
Right.
But the generals might be retiring now at 100,000 a year. And if you think there aren't too many of them, you're dead wrong. There are 2,000 of them. So, Obama, Bush, and Clinton dismissed about 400 of them, 20% of the generals. They're not dead. And neither is Joan Rivers. Let's move on.
Okay.
Neither is Joan Rivers. Let's move on.
There's some pretty profound statements that you're dropping on us here.
And neither
today,
is Kenneth Lay. Let's move on.
Okay. Those are pretty profound statements. I hate to say it, Jim. I'm just saying it's difficult to corroborate the Joan Rivers thing, especially, you know.
Oh, you'll be seeing her on YouTube. Don't worry.
Roger that.
She won't be talking much, though.
Okay. Well, Jim, we've only got about a minute and a half left. Is there any words of wisdom, things that we can do, you know, stuff like that? You want to give us a little bit of a heads up on where we're going from here?
Yeah, get rid of your stock account based in the dollar. Get rid of your bank account CDs based in the dollar. Get rid of all your things that are based in the dollar, because you're going to suffer some profound problems with them on devaluation. Buy gold, buy silver, buy bars, and buy coins, and don't leave them in the United States. I recommend gold money. I recommend gold core. I recommend perpetual assets in California.
Right.
I recommend BMG bullion out of Toronto. But let me just close on a very remarkable phenomenon that has happened. We have every 7 years a very strange thing happening, and this ain't the credit cycle, debt buildup and cleansing, rinse and repeat. Every 7 years, 2017, we're going to see the petrodollar demise, the dollar rejected. 08, it was the Lehman failure. 01 was a 9/11 inside job,
yep.
Telecom bust. 94 was the Mexican peso tequila crisis. 87 was Black Monday. 1980 was the Hunt brothers. 73 was the oil embargo, and you go back. But if you just look at from 1980 on with seven events in 49 years, the probability of seven events happening 7 years apart in 49 years is one in 62 billion. It's called the Shemitah.
That's right.
Or the Shemitah. Mm-hmm. It's something that's near and dear to you. You wanted to talk about, but we didn't have much time. But I wanted to just squeeze it in there and say that this Reuben doctrine of killing tomorrow to buy one more day, we've run out of time.
Roger that. Roger that. Wiser words not been spoken before here on this radio show, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Jim Willie can be found at thegoldenjackass.com. Jim, thank you very much for joining us on the program today.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. I invite people to go to the goldenjackass.com website, range around, check some free material, and sign up for the hat trick letter.
Yep, sign up for the hat trick letter, ladies and gentlemen. Definitely do that and support Jim, and we appreciate him coming on today. Just as a heads up, what was I going to talk about? Roger Sales Show. He has got his teacher on today. Definitely stay tuned to TFR and listen to Roger Sales Show next. He's going to talk about more of the sovereign issue, more of the IRS type stuff. But he has his protege, or his I don't know what you want to call it, his teacher on today. So it's going to be great. Appreciate you guys all being here. We'll be back in good form tomorrow. You guys take care and good luck out there. Do not let the man get you down. Take care, everybody. We will see you tomorrow. Bye, guys.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information without the hate, hype, and fear. We are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.